Just 29, 30, and 31, and I'm going to use a different approach, but to begin, I just want to show you a little map that I've drawn on the overhead to sort of help us. These two arteries, these two lines, are supposed to represent the Euphrates and the Tigris rivers, which form Mesopotamia, Mesos, land, in the middle of Potamia, the rivers, Mesopotamia. Now, Jacob, when we left him last, was on his way to Haran, or to Padan Aram, which is the plain, or the flat land of Aram, or Syria. It is beyond the Euphrates River, beyond Carchemish. And you remember that Haran was the land of Rebekah and also his great uncle. So we left him at Bethel. He had gone from Beersheba to Bethel, and he had a little encounter, ladder counter, with the Lord in a dream at Bethel, and then he was on his way to Padan Aram, and he was alone. And he was fleeing from Esau for fear that Esau would take his life. And Rebekah had sent him away, and his father had sent him away. Rebekah thinking it would just be a temporary thing, maybe a few months, and he's going to be gone for 20 years. I seem to be hearing myself back. Is this too loud? Does that sound weird to you out there? Doesn't? Okay. I'll try not to let it bother me. Well, this is the area where he'll be. This area around Haran is called Padan Aram. And Padan simply means the field or the plain of Aram, the field or the plain of Syria. Now, my approach tonight is going to be a little different than what we've been doing in Genesis, because I think this story is so familiar to everybody. What I want to do is point out the highlights and then some of the spiritual lessons. So if you're taking notes, these notes will comprise the essence or the key factors relative to Genesis 29 through 31, which tells about Jacob's 20 years in Padan Aram. He's at Uncle Laban's house. He is somewhat of an exile, somewhat of a man without a country. And what I want to try to do is summarize or emphasize what the text of Scripture emphasizes without going through every verse, because I think most of you know the story. So I'm going to try to give you some things perhaps that you would not see in the story and some that you would see. First of all, I want to mention the chronology. The chronology. One of the things that the story emphasizes is the length of time. The text of Scripture emphasizes the length of time that he is gone. 20 years. Will you look, please? Oh, by the way, this will be ages 77 to 97 in Jacob's life. And that is found in 31:41. It's found in a number of places, but there is a summary statement in 31:41. Will you look at that, please? 31:41. He is rehearsing in this verse his years and his service to Laban. He's angry when he's saying this, but he says in 41, "Thus have I been 20 years in your house. I have served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your cattle. And thou hast changed my wages 10 times. Okay? So the chronology comprises 10 years, and they go this way. For Leah first, that's the way it worked out. He didn't know he was working for Leah. But for Leah, 7 years. Now, I'll refresh you, or try to refresh you with the story. Here comes Jacob up to Padan Aram, or near to the Haran area. And we have a similar story, similar to Rebekah's. The word gets back to Uncle Laban, and finally he gets to Uncle Laban's house, and he tells about how everybody is back home, and they hug and kiss and embrace each other, and they have a good time. And then it says he dwelt for a month with Laban. And Laban says, "Look, Jacob, why should you work for me for nothing. I do more than that for my servants. You're going to be here. What can I pay you? Now, there was sort of like an adoption contract that this thing functioned under. There was a custom of that land. And he sort of was like adopted into the family. But anyhow, when he's asked about his wages, he says, well, I noticed since I've been here that you have two daughters, and I like the younger one, Rachel. I realize Leah has tender eyes, but Rachel, as far as I'm concerned, she's got it. I respond to her. So I'll tell you what I'll do for my wages. I'll work for 7 years for Rachel, for you. I'll serve you for 7 years. You give me Rachel. And Laban says, oh, that sounds like a good deal to me. I'd rather you have her than, you know, even one of our countrymen. So he goes to work, and he works for 7 years. But after the 7 years, when he goes to get married, and I do not know all the ramifications of the wedding ceremony, in other words, he didn't recognize that it was Leah that he was in bed with. And apparently the situation was such that when she was ushered into his tent or whatever it was, that it was dark, and he did not know that it was Leah. And the next day he discovers that here he had completed the marriage by conjugation with Leah. And he says, hey, Uncle Laban, what's the story? And Laban says, oh, I forgot to tell you. I forgot to tell you back at the beginning of the 7 years, it's not our custom to give away the younger before the older. So you got the older. So you serve me another 7 years, you can have the younger. So again, then for Rachel, he then serves 7 years. Now, it appears, however, that he's a bigamist almost right off after the first 7 years. It appears that he is having marital relations with Rachel before the completion of this second 7 years, because she's barren, see? And the text emphasizes her barrenness. Okay? The last thing that he said is that he served for sheep and cattle. Just the word cattle is used, but we're going to find the word for sheep and cattle in them. And he serves then 6 years after Rachel. Let me refresh you about that. During this second 7 years, we have a number of children that are born, one almost every year. And finally, after the 7 years are up, he's saying to Laban, hey, I want to go back home. And Laban says, hey, I've noticed that I've been greatly blessed because Jehovah is with you. And I would like to have you tarry here. So I'll tell you what. Now, up to this point, we have no indication that he got anything except his room and board. 14 years. And he got, of course, a bunch of kids and wives and so on there. And the whole family was supported. But Laban says, because the Lord's blessed me so much by your being here, tell me what you want in wages and I'll give it to you. And Jacob says, I've got it all figured out. I want some cattle. I want some sheep. I want some goats. And here's the way we're going to work it. And that's when, you remember, they had the incident with the ring strake, the dappled, the spotted, the striped, and so on. And so he works 6 years, and he becomes very, very wealthy. Okay? So, what the text then emphasizes, and I'm going to leave these lines on here, because the second thing that it emphasizes is the issue or the outcome. The issue or the outcome of what happened over these 20 years. Okay? Let's stay right in line now. The issue or the outcome with Leah, and this is over the whole 20 years, is six sons, and one daughter. Okay? Now, one of the important things that we want to asterisk here by the six sons is the fact that one of the sons was Judah. That becomes very important. We'll have a spiritual lesson on that later. Six sons and one daughter, and number four son was Judah out of Leah. Okay? Now, When after she has her fourth child, she's barren for a while. And Rachel is barren. So Rachel says, I want to have a child, so I'm going to give you my concubine to have a child by. And when she has the child, I'm going to let the child be born on my knees like it was mine. So the story gets a little confusing, so we'll just have to summarize the outcome without making it chronological. Rachel is going to bear him two sons, but it's going to be late in the... actually, only one's going to be born here. Benjamin's going to be born later, and she's going to die when Benjamin is born. Joseph and Benjamin. Okay? But in the meantime, she gives him a concubine. So through Rachel, actually in the second 7 years when it's going on, he gets a concubine from her, and her name is Bilhah. Bilhah. And from Bilhah, he has two sons. Okay? Those two sons are Gad and Asher. Now, Leah becomes barren. And to be barren at that time, to be sterile, was considered a form of divine reproach. And there's a lot of jealousy going on between, you know, when you have two wives, they're jealous of each other. Now, I know none of you have experienced that yet, but if you ever do, you'll find out you're in trouble. And Jacob found out he was in trouble very, very early. He begins to show more attention to Rachel than he does to Leah, and Leah gets concerned, and she gives him a concubine. So, oh wait, I should draw the arrow like this and then make one concubine whose name is, excuse me, Zilpah. Okay, and from the concubine then we have two sons. These two sons are Dan and Naphtali. Okay. From the sheep and the goats, the ring-straked sheep and the dappled cows, spotted and so on, he gets enormous wealth over a six-year period of time. So that when he arrives, he has very little with him. When he leaves 20 years later, okay? When he leaves 20 years later, this is what he has. 12 sons, one daughter, and I'm running out of space. 12 sons, one daughter, two concubines, and enormous herds of sheep, cattle, goats. He has camels to transport himself, and he has servants. Okay. Yeah, I not put the wives down. Okay, he has two wives. All right. So what I'm saying is that one of the things that the text emphasizes is here he arrives this way. He works for 14 years. He has hardly anything in material possession, but he has a very large family. Works six more years, and then he leaves, and he has enormous prosperity. He has outdone his uncle in terms of prosperity. Okay. Now what I'd like to do then is emphasize five spiritual... Any questions on what we've done so far? This is sort of a hurried, cursory survey of these 20 years and these three chapters. Any questions about them? Okay, let me then go on, point three. And this gets us into the crux of what I'd like to do tonight. I've picked out five lessons from chapters 29 through 31. Lesson number one. Lesson number one is that God fulfilled his promises. We would expect him to do this, but if you don't look closely in the text, you're liable to miss the point that God had made certain promises to Jacob, and he was going to fulfill them. And in those 20 years, he fulfills these promises. God fulfills his promises of chapter 28, verses 13 through 15. Okay, let's look at 28, which was where we left him off the last time. Genesis 28, verse 13. He had the vision of the ladder, and above the ladder the Jehovah stands. And Jehovah says, I am Jehovah, God of Abraham, thy father, and God of Isaac. The land wherein thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. That is, he's going to give him Palestine. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth. Well, remember, he doesn't have any seed yet. But when he comes back from Padan Aram, he has at least 13 children. And 12 of them are males. Okay? And thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and the north, and the south, and in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. One of those 12 sons will be Judah, through whom will come the Messiah. Now, verse 15, and here is the key. Behold, I am with you. I will keep you in all places whither you go. I will bring you again into this land, for I will not leave you until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of. Okay? So one of the promises was for children. So we'll note that again. God is fulfilling that promise. He has 12 sons and one daughter. Okay. The second aspect of God's promise was the fact that he was with him in a very unique way, and so that he blessed him in such a way that people around Jacob said, hey, God is blessing you. See? So we had obvious blessing of Jehovah. Now, will you look at chapter 30, verse 27 and verse 30? And these words are the words of Laban. These are the words of Laban when, after Jacob had worked for 14 years, and Laban had been able to observe what was happening in Jacob's life for 14 years, these are his words. Jacob has just said, I'd like to go back home. Let me take my wives and my children, and let me go home. And Laban, verse 27, said unto him, I pray you, if I have found favor in your eyes, don't go home. For I have learned by experience. Now that's a statement we'll have to deal with. Well, how does the New American translate that, for I have learned by experience? Would somebody read that, please? New American Standard Version? Don't all read it once. I have divined. Read the rest of it. That the Lord is with you, hath blessed me. Is that what it said? Okay. You notice the difference? I have divined. King James says, I have learned that Jehovah hath blessed me for thy sake. We'll go back to that in a second. I just want you to catch the flavor of Laban's mentality. Laban is saying, hey, boy, you have done good service for me, and boy, I have been greatly blessed in my ranching enterprise, and it's because you're with me. Okay, look at verse 30. These are the words of Jacob now. For it was little which thou hadst before I came, and now it is increased into a multitude, and Jehovah has blessed you since my coming. And now when shall I provide for mine own house also? This is Jacob's response. So there was an obvious blessing. Now, let's go back to that I have divined. What that literally says is, I have observed by omens. I have observed by omens. Or by divination. Okay. Which means that Laban—it's doubtful if Laban's a believer, but there are some indications in the passage that he does identify with Jehovah. But if he is, he's still toying around with Babylonian occult auguries and mediums and so on. And that is very apparent in that verb. That's just, that word learned by experience is all one verb, which means that he exercised or got involved with some divination. And in the divination, the concept was Jehovah was, in a special way, with Jacob. Okay? God was fulfilling his promises, though. He had promised to bless and care for and take care of the physical needs of Jacob. And now he has an enormous family. Okay? Okay, so the next thing that's going to happen in terms of this is that God does provide the food and the clothing and all the goodies that Jacob had wanted. He now is blessed with personal material wealth. Okay, chapter 31, verse 11 and 12 and 16. Chapter 31, verse 11 and 12 and 16. Let's see. The 6 years are up that he's working for these cattle. And his herds have outstripped, in terms of production and so on, they have outstripped everything that Laban had over the whole 20 years. He is more prosperous in 6 years than Laban was in 20. And it's the Lord that did this. You read in verse 11 of 31, "The angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob, and I said, Here am I. And he said, Lift up now your eyes and see all the rams which leap upon the cattle." And the idea for cattle there, of course, would have to be sheep. "Are ringstrake, speckled, and grizzled. For I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee, or has done unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowedst a vow unto me. Now arise and get thee from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred." Verse 16. "For all the riches which God hath taken from our father." This is a quote now. That's not too good of a verse to illustrate this, though. "All the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do." And the idea simply is this, that Rachel and Leah are saying, everything that was rightfully ours in terms of inheritance, our father has taken from us. But God hath blessed you in such a way that what you have is more than his. So it's right that we leave. It's not wrong that we leave. Okay? So it sort of reinforces the fact that he was really prosperous. Maybe another verse that might help us would be verse 31:1. Or let's look at 43 of the previous chapter and then 31:1. 43 and 31:1-8. Try not to read all of them because it'll take too much time. "And the man increased exceedingly," this is Jacob, "and had much cattle, and maidservants, and men servants, and camels, and asses. And he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob held his countenance, and Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not to him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with you." And then the story goes on to tell about some of the reasons for his leaving. This then demanded a certain need for protection from the Lord. And so in the passages that follow, the emphasis on the protection of God, he said to Jacob, where he promised him, "I'm going to bring you back." Now he has to protect him. This is illustrated in chapter 31, verse 24, when Jacob, after he has left with his family, Laban pursues him. And God comes to Laban and warns him in 31:24 not to hurt Jacob. "And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, Take heed that you speak not to Jacob neither good nor bad. Make sure that you don't do anything to Jacob, He is my anointed one is the idea. 31, 41, and 42, after he catches up with Jacob, and they go through the spiel about the stealing of the gods. Jacob rehearses to Laban some of his, he sort of unleashes his pent-up frustrations. And in the course of that, he says in verse 41, "Thus have I been 20 years in your house. I have served you 14 years for two daughters, 6 years for your cattle, and you have changed my wages 10 times." Now, the next verse is real important to express Jacob's point of view. "Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely you'd have sent me away now empty. God hath seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you yesternight." And then Laban goes on to say, well, okay, let's patch it up. Let's make the Mizpah covenant. In other words, Jacob was conscious of the presence of the Lord. This becomes a key spiritual aspect of the passage. It seems as though Jacob is much, much more exercising faith rest throughout this period of his life than he ever had previously. Okay? Okay, so what we're saying, one of the spiritual lessons is that God was fulfilling his promises to Jacob throughout the passage, and that is emphasized in the text of Scripture. Okay? The second thing that is emphasized in terms of lessons in the Scripture is that Jacob is more patient. Jacob is much more patient. Now, try to picture him before this, somebody, you know, playing something like that on him with Leah before this. It's hard to imagine. He would have blown his stack. But in this, he seems to be very patient, very settled. He's much more patient, settled, less scheming. In fact, it is his uncle that the text emphasizes as a schemer rather than Jacob. Less grasping. Less grasping than before this time. Okay? Okay. He is very, very conscious of the presence of Jehovah, it seems, the whole time that he is there. Okay? So he is apparently practicing faith rest. Okay. Now faith, let me emphasize something about faith. We faith rest what we cannot change ourselves. A Christian is not to practice passivity and call it faith rest when there's something in life, some incongruity or some inequality or some injustice that he can correct. He should correct it. But what we can't correct ourselves, we can rest it in the hands of Jehovah. And Jacob is in a situation for 40 years, I'm sorry, for 20 years, in which there is much injustice exercised toward him, and you don't read of him striking back or lashing back. He seems to be patiently enduring. That is indicative of an exercise of faith rest. And this brought with it the concept or the a personal consciousness of God's abiding presence. Now, we've already seen that in one verse. We've seen it in chapter 31 in verse 42, the one we just read. But let me take up again with 31, 6 through 9. Okay, where I left off. Look at chapter 31. Jacob has been blessed with this material prosperity. And he notices that Laban doesn't look upon him like he did before. And then he has a message from the Lord to return to Palestine. And in verse 4 we read of chapter 31, "Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock and said unto them, See, he didn't even feel comfortable about doing it at home, so he did it away from the home. And he said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before, but the God of my father hath been with me. There is Jacob's expression, consciousness, awareness that God has been with him over these years. We never read of Jacob building an altar at Padan Aram. We never read of him praying. But what we do read of him is all good signs of stableness and stability before the Lord, except maybe one. So he has this consciousness that God has been with him. Look, there's some things he had the faith rest. Verse 6, and you know that with all my power I have served your father, and your father hath deceived me, and he hath changed my wages 10 times. But God suffered him not to hurt me. If he said, thus the speckled shall be thy wages, then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he said, thus the ringstrake shall be thy hire, then the cattle bear ringstrake. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and hath given them to me. Okay? So what we're saying is, Jacob was much more patient, more settled, less scheming, and the text emphasizes that. He was practicing faith rest. The third lesson that the text emphasizes is Laban's. Now we have a switch, see? Now we have somebody to compare Jacob with, particularly when Jacob's thinking the way he is in these chapters. So the text emphasizes Laban's selfish, deceptive. He lies, he perverts, he half lies, he half truths, deceptive, self-seeking behavior. Laban's selfish, deceptive, self-seeking behavior. Is contrasted in the text with Jacob's. Patience and honesty. Okay. Now let me point out some of the deceptive things that Laban practiced. Okay? The first one, of course, is obvious. He gives Leah by deception. He gives Leah by deception. 29:18-27. I'll read verse 24 of chapter 29 on. And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah... Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's right. For Zilpha, for an handmaid. And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, that is, Jacob did, what is this thou hast done? Did I not serve with thee for Rachel? Wherefore hast thou beguiled me? And Laban said, it must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. For fill her week, and we will give you this also for the service which thou shalt serve me with yet 7 other years. Now, that seems real strange to us, that that could even happen. And for a long time, of course, some people questioned whether it was really 7 years, despite the fact that chapter 31 confirms it in two places. But in 1925, there was a discovery made called the Mari Tablets. I'm sorry, the Mari tablets were in 1932. The Nuzi tablets. In 1932, there were tablets called the Mari tablets discovered. These were discovered about 250 miles south of Haran, and one about 250 miles southeast of Haran. These Nuzu and Mari tablets, oh, they number. And every time I read about these, it's the figure 20,000. I hate to quote that. They say when they unearthed the temple at Knossos, there were 20,000 clay tablets unearthed. When they unearthed the library of the Hittite kingdom capital, there were 20,000. Every time I read the figure, it's 20,000. I don't know, there's thousands of tablets of these two cultures, okay? And they're in the vicinity of Haran. One's called the town Nuzi, the other town called Mari. And the customs are called Hurrian customs. So if you hear an archaeologist talk about this, he may say Hurrian customs. These Hurrian customs confirm nearly everything you find in Genesis. They confirm the fact that if Abraham would have died childless, then the steward of his house, which was Eliezer of Damascus, would have inherited all that Abraham had. Why? Because that was part of social practice that had become civil law in Abraham's day. And in the story of Jacob, they confirm the relationship that Jacob had with Laban. They confirm the fact that there were often long years of servitude for the procuring of somebody's daughter to be a wife. They confirm the fact that the families in Mesopotamia had household gods, and whoever held the household gods held title deed to the property. They confirm practically the whole story that you have in Genesis. So the Nuzu and the Mari tablets illustrate that the long service was a cultural custom in that part of the Fertile Crescent. But one thing that was not part of the cultural custom was the deception. That was a matter of individuality, and Laban was a crafty deceiver. Okay? He also was deceptive about Jacob's wages. Now, apparently, twice Jacob tells us he changed his wages 10 times, 31, 7 through 9. Then finally he gets back at Laban in 31, verse 41 and 42. And that probably happened during the last 6 years. Every time the things seemed to go well for Jacob, Laban would say, well, I want the ring-straight ones, if that's the way the things were going, or I want the dappled ones, and so on. Okay? He was deceptive with Rachel and Leah, his own daughters. He was deceptive with Rachel and Leah in terms of inheritance. So much so that they turned against him. They lost their respect for their father. And this becomes obvious when they go to leave. Will you look at chapter 31, verse 14 through 16? Okay? Jacob is rehearsing to them the need to leave, and this is their response, verse 14 of 31. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him as strangers? For he hath sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is, and given to Jacob, that is ours, and our children are ours. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto you, Jacob, do. Then Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon camels. That means he had at least 13 for his children, 2 for his wives. That's 15, maybe 2 for the concubines, 17. That's quite a herd. Is that what you call them? Herd of camels? I don't know. Bunch of camels. Okay. What we're saying here is that he was deceptive with his own daughters, and they recognize it, and they don't care about leaving him. Okay. There is another aspect about Laban's relationship or attitudes or mentality is, and he played games with his knowledge of Jehovah. he played games with his knowledge of Jehovah. Okay? Now, first of all, we have to say this, that when Abraham left his brother, after his father died, Terah died up in Haran, he apparently had done a good job of witnessing to them. And it's very probable that they were believers. Because you remember when Abraham wanted a bride for Isaac, he sent back to them to get a bride. He had more confidence that they would be believers, or that you would get a believer from them than you would from somebody in Canaan. So Abraham had a little bit of confidence about what went on back there. And so Laban must have had some type of a testimony about Jehovah. And you'll find him giving lip service to Jehovah. For example, in 30:27, where he recognizes that Jehovah, you notice that he uses Jehovah's name, that Jehovah was with Jacob and had blessed him because of it. Laban said unto him, I pray you, if I have found favor in your eyes, stay here, for I have learned by experience or by divination that Jehovah hath blessed me for your sake. Now there's an indication of a conflict in that passage. If you are identified with Jehovah, you should have no business with the occult. See? He is playing games with his knowledge of Jehovah. In 31:53, when Laban is making the Mizpah covenant, he speaks of the Elohim, or the God of Abraham. Verse 53, this is where he swears his oath relative to the Mizpah covenant. Verse 53, the God, he's speaking to Jacob, and he's saying, hey, look, we got these pillars of stone, and we'll call them Mizpah. Mizpah means watchtower. Very appropriate name for a publication today. Mizpah, the watchtower. And at the watchtower, Laban, who is playing games with the word Jehovah, is making an agreement with Jacob that they won't pass over, and that Jacob won't do any harm to his daughters and so on. It's all lip service. But in verse 53, he goes to swear the oath. And look who he swears the oath by. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, Abraham's brother, and the God of their father, Terah, judge between us. These are the words of Laban. And that's kind of indicative that Abraham's God and Nahor's God and Terah's God were the same God. And he knew it. This, of course, has to do with these teraphim, these images that were taken from his house. Okay. Let me bring you up to this point. Okay, the 20 years are passed. Jacob looks at the circumstances. The circumstances are negative. Uncle Laban has got a dagger in his eye. His sons are getting jealous because Jacob is much more material prosperous than the uncle is. The whole family is starting to turn on Jacob. It was okay as long as they were getting blessed, but now he's getting blessed materially. And some people can't stand that. Moreover, he's away from his home. He's in a foreign country. And he's got a large family to take care of. And so he says, hey, I think it's time to go. Right? Let's have a conference. Rachel, Leah. Couldn't just call one of them. Had to call them both. Okay? He says, I think it's time to go. And then God appears to him in a dream and says, it's time to go home, Jacob. So Rachel and Leah say, I'm ready to go. Let's go. Okay, they're on the camels and they get ready to go. So they're leaving town. Verse 18, chapter 31. Carried away all his cattle and all his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting which he had gotten in Padan Aram for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. And Laban went to shear his sheep. He waited till Laban was gone. And Rachel had stolen the images. Okay? which were her father's. Now that word images is the word in Syriac or in Syrian, which means teraphim. Okay, so these teraphim were images. I guess we have to stick with the word image. Images of the gods. Okay? Now they would be the gods of the Mesopotamian pantheon. This multiplicity of the war, Enlil, the war god, Ishtar, the goddess of fertility, the goddess of sex, the goddess of production. They would have images to all of these gods. And the more wealthy you were, the more images you had in your home. Okay? So Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. Now, why did Rachel steal the images? Okay. This was a difficult question to answer until the Nuzu and the Mari tablets were discovered. And lo and behold, in the Nuzu and Mari tablets, these images were the title deed to all the inheritance of the family. Whoever possessed the images possessed the title deed to all the land and properties of the whole family. So what Rachel had done was to steal, what would we call it, the title deed for everything that Laban owned. Okay. Why, though, did Laban, if he identified with the name Jehovah, why would he even have the images around? He had them because he's playing games with the name Jehovah. Now, when he catches up with them, he goes through a whole rigmarole of phony effrontery, so to speak, about what the issues were. And finally, he gets down to verse 30. I'm now referring to Laban when he catches up with Jacob and says, "And now, though thou wouldst needs be gone, because thy sore longest after thy father's house, why therefore hath you stolen my gods?" So these images are now called his gods, and the word is, of course, our typical word, our Elohim. Why have you stolen our Elohim? It's Elohi in Hebrew, but it's from the word Elohim. Okay? Now I'm using that to describe his sort of playing around with what he understood about Jehovah. And Jacob was really a good witness. We have to say that in front of this man. Now, you remember the rest of the story. Jacob didn't know that Rachel had them. By the way, in the Hammurabi Code, the stealing of these images was punishable by death. You know, stealing these. These were considered so important that the person who stole them would lose their life. And so Jacob, when he responds to, by the way, when he responds in the King James, it's a little bit difficult to, it looks like Jacob might have known about this. Look at verse 31. Keep reading. Laban has just said, "Why have you stolen my Elohim?" And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid." He's not answering the question, "Why did you steal my gods?" He's answering the question why he left in such a hurry while Laban was gone. See? Jacob didn't know that Rachel had these gods. Okay? So he first addresses himself to the fact of his sudden departure, and he says, "I left suddenly because I was afraid, for I said, peradventure you would take by force your daughters from me. With whomsoever you find the gods, however, let him not live. Before our brethren discern you, thou, what is thine with me, and take it to you." So he says, hey, look, you can go through everything we have, and can you imagine what a job that would have been with all of this pack train? One time I was hunting with an old mountaineer from Eagle. And he had packed in all his life into the wilderness to hunt. And we had packed in 18 miles on horseback. We had 6 riding horses and 6 pack horses. Now, to pack a pack horse so that you can ride 18 miles without the stuff falling all over the trail and having to get off and repack them, you have to know how to tie a diamond knot. And I don't know how to tie it, but these cowboys, they all know how to do that. And so you load these pack, they have a pack saddle, and you load those pack saddles up, and the thing looks like this. And these guys throw these ropes around, and they throw it around a certain way. And then underneath, they tie this diamond knot, it's called. Well, one time when I was with this guy, this old man was there, he's about 73. He had busted his hip. To get him on a horse, you had to put his one leg in and throw his other leg up over. He was going to go hunting that year. One time we were stopped by a game warden coming out. Game warden says, "You got any meat?" Guy says, "You bet we got some meat." "Where you got it?" "We got it in those panniers underneath everything." He said, "Don't mind if I look at it?" The old guy says, "No, I don't mind if you look at it. You just go ahead and unpack it all. Make sure you get it all packed back exactly the way we got it, and make sure you get them knots tied tight, because we don't want to have to repack it on the way out." The game warden says, "Well, I guess I'll let you go on." Well, that was nothing compared with what Jacob had. But Jacob said 2 things. Now listen to this. He says, one, whoever took the gods, verse 33, "Whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let that one not live." You can take that person's life. "Moreover, you can look through everything we have, and if I have taken anything of yours, I want to know about it. You can have it back." Now that's indicative of a change in Jacob. He's honest. See? He did not know Rachel had the images. So in the last part of 32 it says, "For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them." Now she's sitting in her tent on top of her camel's saddle, and all the stuff is under it, and she pretends she's having a period. And so when her uncle comes, she says, her father actually, not her uncle, she says, "Don't bother me now. I'm having a period, so you know I don't have the images. Just go your way." And so he leaves, and we don't hear anything more about these images after this. Okay? Okay. One of the things that's emphasized, what we're saying simply, is this: that Laban's selfish attitudes are contrasted with Jacob. Okay? Okay. The fourth lesson, thirdly, mercy. Jacob's efforts, at prenatal influence, on animal reproduction, were totally unnecessary. Now, when you read this story, Jacob makes a lot of human effort at getting the animals to reproduce so that he would prosper. It's the only reference that I can see in the whole 3 chapters of Jacob showing himself as the old Jacob. Okay? But they were totally unnecessary. The point simply is this: when it comes out in the final analysis, God controlled the genetics of these animals in such a way that Jacob was going to be blessed. But let's look at the passage, okay? Chapter 30. And I'll start reading at verse 31. This is when he begins his last 6 years, and he has, Laban has says, "What will I pay you if you stay on? What will I give you?" Verse 31. And Jacob says, "You shall not give me anything if you will do but one thing for me. You won't have to give me anything that you now have. Just let me do this. If you will do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flock." Verse 32. "I will pass through all your flock today, remove from thence all," or literally every "speckled and spotted." Seth is the word. And Seth usually means either a little lamb or a little goat. "Every speckled and spotted lamb or goat, and every brown," and again we have the word Seth, but it doesn't seem to fit. Maybe it should be brown cattle. Maybe that's okay. But then it says among the sheep. So it gets a little confusing about whether he's talking about sheep or cattle, even in the Hebrew text, and that's why you have it translated in such a confusing way in the King James. "And the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such shall be my hire." Okay. Now apparently the concept is this, that there were white sheep, brown cattle, and black goats. And what Jacob wants is to take the ones that were less desired, the speckled, the dappled, the striped, and he wanted to breed those and only take the speckled from them for his own. Okay? So he's asking Laban if this will be a deal. And so you read in verse 33, "So shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come, when it shall come for my hire before your face. Every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the sheep, that shall be counted stolen with me." And Laban says, "Behold, I would it might be according to your word." In other words, he says, hey, it's a good deal, because I can't get as much money for the speckled ones anyhow. That's a good deal. I'll only take the sort of the purebreds. So he removed that day the he-goats that were ring-straked or striped and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, and everyone that had some white in it, and every brown among the sheep, and gave them unto the hands of his sons. And he set 3 days' journey betwixt himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Okay, so he's got all the purebreds, and there's 3 days apart. That's at least 60 miles. And Jacob has all the speckled ones. Okay? So now Jacob tries to do some prenatal preparation, prenatal influence, verse 37. "He took him rods of green poplar, and of hazel or almond, and of the chestnut tree. And they put white stripes in them, and made white appear that was in the rods. Then he took the rods which he had piled before the flocks in the gutters in the watering troughs." He put them in the water where they drank. "And when the flocks came to drink, that they should conceive." And that literally says in Hebrew, to pair, when they came to drink. "And the flocks conceived or paired before the rods and brought forth cattle." The word for cattle here is the Hebrew word tesan, which can either mean small cattle or sheep or goats. "And Jacob did spread the lambs and set the faces of the flocks toward the ring straked, and all the brown in the flock of Laban. And he put his own flocks by themselves and put them not into Laban's cattle." So there he tries to get them by identification, by looking at ring straked animals, that then they would produce ring straked animals. Okay? Verse 41, "And it came to pass, whensoever the stronger cattle did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods before the eyes of the cattle in their watering troughs or gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the cattle were feeble, he put them not in." So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger were Jacob's. So he did about three things in this prenatal. First, he got these trees, cut stripes in them, put them in the watering troughs at the time that these animals were coming into heat. Now, unless we could consider that the rods were some type of aphrodisiac for animals in that water, or that the chemical from the trees could have affected them somehow in the genetics, and unless that could happen, all we can see in this is some type of human engineering, see, so to speak. Jacob was almost 90. He was 90 years old. He knew a lot more about sheep and cattle than I do. I don't know if there's any influence, chemical influence, that could be produced from the kind of wood that he used on animals. I really don't know. It may be possible. But it looks to me like it's all human engineering. Okay? But the fact of the matter was, when they did reproduce, they did reproduce ring-striped, striped, and dappled offspring, so that Jacob began to be prosperous. There were a few regular ones produced, but he pulled them aside, kept them for later. Okay? Now, when you get down to the analysis of it, or even in the words of Jacob, he confesses to the fact that this was the case. Okay, the story is given in 30, 31 through 43, but then in 31 and verse 11 and 12, he had the vision from the Lord, which says this: "And the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob, and I said, Here am I. And he said, Lift up now thine eyes and see, all the rams which leap upon the cattle are ring-straked, speckled, and grizzled. Why? For I have seen all that Laban doth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel." Okay? Okay. In verse 11 and 12, it was really the Lord that saw to it that the genetics were controlled and that Jacob was blessed. One more lesson and we're done. Okay? The fifth one. God will bring his purposes to pass. God will bring his purposes to pass despite the choices of men. God will bring his purposes to pass despite the choices of men. In this story, we have Laban's volition exercises, Rachel's, Leah's, Bilhah's, Zilpah's. In the choice of the coming of Messiah, it really was God's choice. Leah was not Jacob's choice. She was not Jacob's choice. Yet, through Leah comes Judah, and through Judah, Messiah. What if somebody would have said to Jacob, "Jacob, choose Leah, because the fourth son of Leah will be the progenitor of the Messiah, the promised Savior"? I wonder what he would have done. Probably still would have loved Rachel, but he would have schemed to get Leah so that he could be the great progenitor of Messiah. Well, that already had been God's choice in ages past. But now we have another choice. Not just Jacob, but Leah, and through Leah, Judah. And it was not a human choice, it was a divine choice. Okay? Okay, these are things that I feel... we probably should mention the Mizpah covenant. Let's just close with that, okay? This is the way the story closes. After Laban catches up with Jacob, and they have it out, Jacob really unloads. He finally vents himself. He's really angry. He's been patient all these years. Now he really unloads, okay? After he gets through, Laban suggests the Mizpah covenant, verse 44. "Now therefore, come, let us make a covenant," chapter 31. "I and you, let it be for a witness between me and you. And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said to his brethren, gather stones, and they took stones, and they made a heap. And they did eat there upon the heap. And Laban called it Jeger Sahudotha, which means a heap of testimony. And Jacob called it Galeed. One spoke in Aramaic, one spoke in Hebrew. Both of them mean a heap of testimony, a heap of witness. Verse 48. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and you this day. Therefore is it name of it called Galeed. And Mizpah. Mizpah means watchtower. For he said, now this is the words of this conniving, grasping Laban. The Lord watch between me and thee when we're absent one from another. That's the words of a self-righteous hypocrite, and he makes a promise, and he uses the name of Jehovah. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, if thou shalt take other wives beside my daughter, no man is betwixt us. See, God is witness between me and you. Now, up to this point, he hasn't shown any concern for his daughters. Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, and behold this pillar which I have cast between me and you. This heap be a witness. This pillar be witness, that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you shall not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. And the idea is that they make a mutual agreement that they will not transcend this boundary. And then he swears by the God of Abraham, God of Nahor, and the God of their fathers. And he says, let that God judge between us in this matter. Jacob swears by the fear of his own father, Isaac. And that's the end of that story. Are there any questions we could try to answer maybe about what we said or any aspect of it? Well, we're going to have a different man, particularly after the next chapter. Jacob will become Israel. In the next chapter, he is now mature enough in his mentality and his relationship with the Lord. We're going to have a changed man, and I think some of the indication of that change is already here, as we pointed out tonight. Okay, let's close in prayer. We're grateful, our Father, for these passages in the Old Testament which point out the human weaknesses that all of us have in ourselves. I pray that God the Holy Spirit will encourage us to, through these studies, to be men and women who look to Thee for leadership and who put our trust ultimately and finally in Your promises. We ask these things in Christ's name with thanksgiving. Amen.